Welcome to Lucas Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Before we start, I just want to say that, believe it or not, I'm back in the KBOO studios doing this show live after 16 months of producing this show from my home studio, and I'm thrilled to have you listening as I speak. And now on to our live show for today. Four hydropower dams built between 1962 and 1975 have transformed the lower Snake River into slackwater reservoirs, deadly to salmon and 137 other species that are critical to the salmon food chain. After decades of debate and legal challenges over the need to remove these dams, a new comprehensive solution called the Columbia Basin Fund is bringing together a wide array of voices in support of breaching these dams and at long last providing a concrete opportunity to save salmon from extinction. Today we talk with Brett Vandenhovel, Executive Director of Columbia Riverkeeper, and Shannon Wheeler, Vice Chair of the Nez Perce Tribe, about why the Columbia Basin Fund proposal is so critical at this moment and what it will take to make it a reality. Shannon and Brett, welcome to Lucas Focus.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Thank you, Barbara.
Well, it's great to have you, and it's amazing that we're actually talking live. I'm talking live from the KBOO studio, and we're not recording this 3 or 4 days in advance. So we can talk about things that have just happened for a change. So welcome to the new live version of Welcome Lucas Focus. Well, I wanted to start by talking about what these four dams are on the Snake River, which we've been hearing a lot about over the last many years. So, Brett, could you begin by just describing why these dams were built?
Sure. And, yeah, thanks again for having us. And I'm glad this is live because it's rapidly evolving. There's a lot going on right now. So, Snake River dams were built, you know, as part of the dam building era in the Columbia River Basin, and the four lower Snake River dams were built, as you noted, fairly late, up until the mid-70s is when they were finished, and the purpose was to provide hydropower and also transportation of barges up into all the way to Lewiston, Idaho. You know, we can talk about the problems of these dams, but that was the original purpose, you know, and they served that purpose for a long time. But just like other sources of electricity, they're no longer needed. They're extremely harmful. The damage that they're causing far outweighs the benefits, and there's alternatives. And so, you know, these dams were probably a bad idea when they were built, because we knew very well then that they were going to destroy salmon runs, and, you know, it's time to make some changes.
Well, you know, this morning I was just Googling the four Snake River dams, and the first site that popped up was a site that said, Snake River Dams, good for America, and I was a little surprised to see that. So I wonder, are there still people who are promoting these dams as being good for America?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there is a lot of propaganda around the dams, the Snake River dams. You know, some of the folks that are promoting the dams and being more aggressive now because of the high pressure to take them out are the bargers that are, you know, taking barges up and down the Snake all the way to Lewiston, Idaho. And, you know, there's alternative ways to get wheat to market, right? We have rail. We have other means, so we can make changes. This is something we can do in America. Like, barging is a good way to ship wheat, but not on the backs of salmon and forcing salmon to extinction. There's also some, you know, some political leaders in that area that are very pro-dam. You know, when I worked on a dam removal on the White Salmon River, which at the Conda Dam, at the time was the largest dam removal in America. And we saw the same thing. You know, we saw all this opposition to the dams, I mean, to keeping the dams. And when they finally got around to removing them after a lot of public pressure, the salmon came back. There was a huge amount of construction jobs. It was a big community celebration. And everyone was on board. And this might sound silly, but I think there's just something in, you know, in the DNA of certain humans that doesn't want to remove anything that humans built. But once we started this process and the construction crews got going, and then the very next year salmon returned, we really saw what we can do by, you know, if we take out big blocks of concrete out of the river, let these rivers flow again, it can immediately revitalize the system and the community and bring a lot of economic benefit.
Well, Shannon, I'm wondering, what was the tribe's position when these dams started going in? Were you able to raise your voices at that time and raise some questions about the efficacy and the logic of building these dams?
Yes, thank you for the question. And you know, the tribes back then, you know, were still in a learning process of getting to know, you know, how we navigate the American system. And as the dams are coming in, you know, what was told to the tribes, it did provide jobs to the tribes, you know, a lot of laboring jobs, you know, I had a couple uncles that worked on the dams with the Army Corps of Engineers, and, you know, my dad was a construction worker that worked with the powerhouse at Dorshak. You know, I mean, so there was different things that the tribes were told, and some of the things that weren't told to the tribes is, you know, that, you know, the salmon runs would be in many cases extirpated from certain areas, as well as you know, the prolific runs of the historic runs would be, you know, knocked down or basically come to the point of extinction, if not extinct as well. So, you know, some of those things that weren't told to the tribes at that time, I believe the tribes were not in the full know of what would happen as they were told that, well, there'll be fish ladders and passage that will happen through these. But I mean, these things have proven not to work, even with the advancements of fish ladders and what they're doing. It's still not enough.
Well, actually, do you think that the people, the Army Corps of Engineers, actually knew how much damage they were doing to the salmon runs when they went ahead and built the dams?
Yeah, according to, you know, some of the things that I've heard, you know, and even from Congressman Simpson, is that the Army Corps of Engineers knew that they would be destroying the salmon runs with building of the dams.
So why are the dams so dangerous to salmon?
Well, you know, they just create obstacles that weren't currently there. You know, I mean, you have to understand the dynamics and the evolution of the salmon, and you know, over the millions of years that they've been here, that they're made for fast water. I mean, they're you know, would be the way that they're built, you know, would be like a jet flying through the air. They're aerodynamically made to be able to fly, same with the salmon, through moving water. And, you know, what the dams do is they create a lake, and in that lake, you know, the salmon aren't moving as well through that water. They're not meant to move in that slack water like that. And they also create, of course, in that lake, they accumulate sediment, which then creates channels in the water, which creates narrower pathway or waterways through the river system that these salmon, the salmonids, the juvenile fish, as they're migrating out, to make it through there without going through these basically, you know, smorgasbords for the predation that's happening with the squawfish or other predators that are in the river system. So those two things right there, and then they're also warming water, and that's before they even hit the barrier. Once they hit the barrier, there's two ways you get through it. You go either over the spillway, or you go through the turbine. And so whichever way you end up going, whichever way one of the juveniles end up going through there, then they have to deal with being banged around and, you know, come out the other side and get into the dissolved gases that they have issues with as well, and then do it seven more times beyond below lower granite. And for me, I'm just kind of thinking, you know, they're going through their survival rate from the headwaters to the slack water is in probably the high 100 or high 90s of success, And once they hit the dams, then, you know, their numbers drop considerably. But they're also expected to migrate to the ocean, which is, you know, they're expected to get there and be a healthy fish. But as, you know, probably happens is that, you know, they're running from predators or swimming from predators, and they're possibly being maimed, and they're, you know, being exhausted because they have to swim through the slack water now, and instead of moving through free-flowing water, which generally would push them out, and then they go through the dams, and who knows what happens when that goes. I mean, when they go through there, they're expected to, you know, they're probably hitting their fins and their heads against the cement. But, you know, I like to, you know, put it as like, say an Olympic athlete is training, since the Olympics are on right now. They train and train and train, and for to become the best athlete they can and put themselves in position for the greatest success. And say one of them, a vaulter, sprains their knee before the Olympics and is still expected to go to the Olympics and perform well. Well, they're not going to perform at 100% because of the fact that they have sprained their knee and their ability to perform at the highest level is no longer there because of the injuries that they sustained through their journey. The same with the salmon is expected to perform well in the ocean, which they're having to swim for food, and you know, the conditions are difficult there for them right now. That you know, they're expected to be 100% and survive there. And we're not giving them that opportunity as the losses that are happening between here and in the ocean. So, you know, to put it in that type of analogy, that, you know, the difficulties of what the dams are doing, those are the obstacles that are they're placing with the juvenile salmon as they migrate out.
Well, you listen to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Shannon Wheeler, who's vice chair of the Nez Perce Tribe, and Brett Vandenhovel, executive director of Columbia Riverkeeper, about why the Columbia Basin Fund proposal is so critical at this moment and what we'll do to make it a reality as talk revs up about removing the four lower Snake River dams. Well, I want to talk about the history of all the efforts to get rid of these dams. So, Brett, I know Columbia Riverkeeper has been involved for a long time. Why is Columbia Riverkeeper so concerned about these dams, and why focusing on getting rid of these dams as opposed to some of the other dams on the main stem of the Columbia River?
The four lower Snake River dams are just salmon killers. They warm up the Snake River, as Vice Chair Wheeler was saying. They, you know, all of the other impacts. And they also block incredible habitat. With climate change, we need fish to be able to get back to high elevation, relatively intact, cool habitat to spawn. And there is a lot of that up the Snake River watershed if the salmon can get back to there. So that's one reason, is access to this amazing habitat. Yeah, there are problems with the other dams. The thing about the Snake River dams and why it seems like such a no-brainer to save the salmon and remove them is they only produce 4% of our region's electricity. They do not produce a lot of electricity. It's something we can easily replace with truly clean energy like solar or even just conservation in our homes and businesses. Vice Chair Wheeler and Nez Perce Tribe have been incredible leaders in drawing attention to the plight of the salmon and the need to restore this region, along with, I mean, recently over 60 tribes in the Pacific Northwest have called for Lower Snake River Dam removal. And so that's another reason, Columbia Riverkeeper, we want to stand in solidarity with tribal nations and follow their lead and join them in doing what's best for salmon.
So, but why is it that the Snake River dams are so much more destructive and that much more salmon killers than the Bonneville or the Dalles or McNary or John Day dams?
You know, they all have serious impacts on salmon. The Snake River runs Snake River sockeye that are bordering on extinction. And so, when fish are getting all the way up to the Snake River, they are, facing those additional dams. And so part of it is a cumulative nature of it, right? If they can make it through those four main stem dams, they still have more dams to go through on the Snake. So I don't know if they have bigger impacts on salmon. They all have big impacts on salmon. But the focus on the Snake River is in part because of the very small amount of electricity that they're producing, how hot they're making the Snake River. We can immediately solve that problem by removing those dams or make it much better and accessing that high elevation habitat. So those are all really key reasons why to focus on the Snake River.
Well, also, I understand the Snake River is quite a bit of smaller river than the Columbia. So does that have an impact on the fact that the reservoirs behind the Snake River dams heat up much more than the reservoirs behind the Columbia River dams?
It's in a very hot, dry part of the state of Washington as well. So it's getting a lot of solar radiation and warming up But, all of the reservoirs are warming up. It's a cumulative problem on both the Columbia and the Snake. Some of these runs are on the brink of extinction, and something needs to be done right now. We've talked about this. We've debated it for a long time. There's really no scientific debate of whether this is needed or not. Everyone who looks at this, and for a long time, as you mentioned, the history, this has been a conversation as a necessary thing for a long time, but right now it's just turned into a political issue. It's a question of politics. Are we going to remove these dams in time to prevent salmon extinction, or are we going to continue to kick the can down the road?
And I think we should also mention this, not just the extinction of salmon, it's also having a major effect on the southern resident orcas in the Salish Sea. And in fact, that seems to have brought more attention to the Snake River dams, a lot thanks to this movie called Dam to Extinction that came out a couple years ago. But I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that and how people who are fighting the Snake River dams on the Columbia Basin are making alliances with people in the Salish Sea. And actually, Shannon, I'd like to have you address this because a lot of the effort to save the orcas in the Salish Sea is being spearheaded by the tribes up there.
Yes, thank you again for pointing that out. One thing I'd like to say too is to the issue of the Snake River dams. The question you asked, Brett, was a lot of the species that are ESA listed are behind the Snake River dams. A lot of the salmon that are in the Columbia River have been extirpated by the non-passage of Chief Joe and Grand Coulee Dam. So, these last of the wild runs that are facing eight dams are behind Lower Granite. And so I think, the deeper pools and the more water that's flowing through the Columbia River versus the Snake is a good point of the survival and actually having to cross eight dams versus four. So I think that survival rate is, once they go through four, then they're expected to go through four more. And so, versus if they were just going through four dams, I imagine they'd probably have a lot more energy. But I think that's a lot of the big cause of the Lower Snake River and the listing of the ESA species that are behind those four dams.
Well, Shannon, when did the tribes get involved in trying to take out these dams? Because it seems to me, I've been living in this area for 50 years now, and I actually was here 4 years when they put in the last dam on the Snake River. And it seems to me, as soon as that dam went in, people were talking about taking them out. So I just wondered how much of the energy of removing the dams was spearheaded by the tribes.
Well, knowing that, during, I guess, the fish wars of Rapid River and other, after the Bolt decision, that noticing that salmon runs were less and less, and our ability to exercise our treaty right was not happening that at the levels that we expected them to happen, that the tribe knew then that, you know, these dams were affecting our way of life, as well as the stories from when the Lewiston Dam was built that extirpated the run into the Clearwater River, which, you know, that are there's stories from our tribal members that say they can just remember seeing the salmon turning around in the whirlpools that were right below the dam, just dead carcasses of salmon that didn't make it to their spawning grounds once that dam was built. So our tribe knew about it then, and that was in the early 1900s when the Lewiston Dam was put in. But seeing the different runs that were going into these tributaries of the Snake River, to Naha, to Lostine, to Big Creek, to South Fork, to Rapid River, all of these other tributaries, that the salmon runs were less and less each year, and then culminating in the fish wars, the Rapid River War of 1980, that basically was a standoff between the tribal fishermen here at Nez Perce and the state of Idaho for our ability to harvest fish under our treaty right. And the reason that the Rapid River hatchery was there was because of mitigation due to the Hell's Canyon dam and complex that were put in. But, you know, we've known since then, since the salmon runs were changing. And then in the 1990s, the tribe passed resolution calling for breaching of the four lower Snake River dams. And you know, as part of, you know, we take part in many different forums, you know, whether we're in the Pacific Salmon Commission or, you know, our CRITFIC or other tribes. But, you know, our message is always the same through there, is that, you know, we're advocating for salmon, and these are the things that we're seeing. So yeah, we've been in the fight for a long time, and we've known for a long time.
Well, Brett, how about Columbia River Keeper? How long has Columbia River Keeper been fighting to get rid of these dams?
Yeah, it's also been, I mean, our organization started 20 years ago, and actually around Hanford nuclear issues, and soon after that branched into a lot of other issues. But yeah, it's been almost since the beginning. You know, there was a big effort during the Clinton administration to remove these dams. It made some progress, but wasn't ultimately successful. And now it's, you know, certainly past time.
Well, I have these memories of there being, and this is during the Clinton administration, where the government would put forward a plan for salmon protection, or salmon restoration on the Columbia River, and it would just basically ignore the damage the dams were putting in, and then it would go to a judge, and the judge would call for the removal of the four Snake River dams, and then it would be ignored. And then, I mean, it seemed like there was very little movement during Clinton. But then during George W. Bush, it was like moving backwards, where they actually declared that the dams were part of nature. So, and that's about the time that you guys got started. So I just wonder what kinds of litigation was going on, and why it just seemed like we were in this tape loop for 20 years.
There's, and Vice Chair Wheeler could speak about this, and as First Tribe has been leaders on this, but there's been active, long-running litigation led by Earth Justice, is representing many NGOs, and Nez Perce has been a leader in this. The state of Oregon as well has challenged the federal government to their credit, and you know, they put out the short version is they put out a plan called a biological opinion, and the federal government does, and what on, you know, restoring salmon and in the Columbia River Basin, including the Snake River, and courts have continuously found that plan inadequate, so we've challenged that plan. One of the problems is, you know, know, in this type of litigation, if the plan is ruled inadequate, the remedy is for them to go do another plan, or that's been the ruling, and they come back with another weak plan that doesn't work. Lately, there has been some additional relief that's been really helpful. The court has ordered additional spill, which means, spill is a funny word, but it means more water over the dams, you know, allowing the rivers to flow a little more like rivers. They call it, you know, the dam operators call it spilling it, as if it's wasting the river, but it's allowing the juvenile fish, these, you know, the baby salmon, to get out, and it's pushing them out to the ocean in a more, in a faster way, the way a natural river would flow. So we've been able to obtain more spill, which has really helped and helped boost the runs a bit, but it's just not enough. And it doesn't solve the problem of the adults getting back. It doesn't solve the problem of how hot the rivers are. And so we have, just in July, on July 16th, filed another injunction asking for more spill. And we're hopeful that we will, you know, be successful. It's been important what's happening in the courtroom, but the reality is this problem is so big that it requires a congressional solution. It requires leadership of the Pacific Northwest delegation to step forward. We're probably, you know, this litigation is important, and we will continue to pursue it until, you know, to protect salmon from going extinct. But we're hopeful that it isn't endless litigation that is only getting us halfway there. We're hopeful that this bigger package can move forward in Congress that would create real solutions that are far beyond the, you know, capability of litigation.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOOF Media in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Brett VandenHovel, who's Executive Director of Columbia Riverkeeper, and Shannon Wheeler, Vice Chair of the Nez Perce Tribe, about why the Columbia Basin Fund proposal, which we're about to hear about, is so critical at this moment and what it will take to make it a reality. So, Brett, you're talking about this, talking about congressional action. So something actually broke in, like, late winter, just a few months ago. What's the difference between the proposal that's starting to be on the table now and all the other efforts for the last, I guess we're talking, what, 45 years to take out these dams?
Well, let me defer to Vice Chair Wheeler on that one, on the proposal that he's had such a, he's been so closely involved in.
Okay, what do you have to say, Shannon?
Well, that's definitely something that the Nez Perce Tribe feels that is the way to approach such a complex problem. And to look at it, you know, we have to go back ourselves to 1855 when we negotiated with the United States government at arm's length for a treaty, and that obligation that the United States has, the 50 states of the Republic. And the action that is being proposed is a congressional action that only can be proposed but in that on the Hill, and appropriations can only come from the Hill. So as we look at this, we feel that, you know, our treaty is a federal, is a tool of the federal government of the United States of America, and so is what Congressman Simpson is proposing. So I think, you know, he recognizes that, you know, there's a problem here.
Wait, let's back up a second, because people might not know who Congressman Simpson is. So who is Congressman Simpson?
Congressman Simpson is a representative from the state of Idaho that, if I can just say a little bit about him, that he's a Republican congressman in a completely, basically red state that is speaking up for something that he knows that he has an obligation to uphold, and that's the treaty with the Nez Perce, and also the obligation to nature and to the salmon that aren't returning to the headwaters in Idaho.
So what's special about his proposal? I mean, what makes it different from all the other proposals that have been floated in previous years?
Well, he takes definitely a comprehensive look at all the entities that are involved in, and looking at the, the salmon, everything is connected to the water. So the water is connected with the transportation. The water is connected with the energy. The water is connected definitely to the salmon and to the tribes. And so he's taken this look and decided that, you know, if it's touching water, then it's definitely connected to salmon. And the issue here is that salmon have been on the decline and a trajectory towards extinction for quite some time. And so he looks at the whole big picture and is looking to solve for those problems. And a lot of them are economic issues and whether we're transporting grain by barge or by rail, or we're looking at energy produced by dams and hydropower or renewable energies, whether it's solar, wind, or nuclear, that, you know, there's opportunities here for the future of the United States and the Pacific Northwest that we can do things better. We can do things smarter. We can do things that make the United States and the Pacific Northwest a stronger place and a leader in the world. And he sees that by doing that, he can also solve the problem that is the salmon issue. And I can tell you that the Nez Perce Tribe and Idaho Department of Fish and Game, that, you know, they've done so much work. We've done so much work in the headwaters of the spawning area, the breadbasket of spawning area for salmon. And so we've done restoration work, rehabilitation work, velocity barrier work, and road obliteration. We've done all these different things that we can do. We've turned so many dials, and we've still just been skimming along and just staying, we're not even close to the historic numbers of salmon that have returned to healthy, harvestable, abundant numbers of natural spawners. Matter of fact, we're on a trajectory down. So we've turned, and he recognizes that we've turned all these dials, but the big dials we haven't turned. We haven't turned breaching, and there's a misconception breaching is tearing out the dams. Well, no, breaching is removing the earthen portions of the dam, and the dam would still remain in place. So there's always the option, well, if this doesn't work and we try, then you can always go back to utilizing those dams at some point in time, so they'd be in mothball status. But I think that's a misconception that, you know, they're torn out, they're gone, that isn't the case. So recognizing that the free-flowing water, where it normally took these salmon 2 days to get to the ocean, now it's taking 3 weeks, 4 weeks for them to get there. And then all these obstacles that they're facing, not only the barriers, but, you know, the predation, sediment, warming climate, and all those issues, and expected to survive once they get to the ocean.
So if you're saying that if the dams are breached and it doesn't work, the salmon still are declining, that they could put the dams back in. Let's say the dams are breached, and is what's more likely to happen is that the salmon will return, and as they did, as Brett was describing, along the White Salmon River when the Conda Dam was removed. At that point, would they take the non-dirt part out of the hardscape of the dams? Would they remove that?
And that's still part of the proposal, understanding that, you know, there's going to have to be a lot of studies done in between now and then, that, that would be something that, of course, Congress would have to decide, but just removing the earthen portion so that they can have the passage through there would be beneficial to them. So that hasn't even been decided yet, whether they would remove anything, you know, any of the structures that make up the four lower Snake River dams.
Well, one of the big questions, it seems to me, about going ahead with dam breaching or dam removal has to do with really building a coalition. They call it the coalition of the willing, but all these different parties with very different interests who have been squabbling about this for 50 years. How does this proposal how is this proposal different in trying to bring together all these diverse voices?
Well, there's definitely an opportunity for people to advance whatever area that they're in. So if you're in energy, you know, there's the opportunity for nuclear, for wind, for solar, for replacing those megawatts that are that are the makeup of the four Snake River dams. And for transportation, you know, there's opportunities for other, you know, modes of transportation that would be by rail that would give them the opportunity to do that. So now you're having options and really bringing things to the forefront that the next generation isn't burdened with the same problems that we're burdened with and having to live with you know, decisions that, you know, we could have made a decision at this point in time to help the salmon run that is on that trajectory towards extinction.
Well, what kind of buy-in has there been so far?
Well, you know, it's Congressman Simpson has always been willing to speak with you know, the irrigators, with the growers, with the energy sectors, and with the tribes that, you know, let's sit down and have this candid conversation, because obviously there's a way of life in the Pacific Northwest that's not only the tribal way of life, but the residents of the Pacific Northwest that have become, you know, accustomed to this this growth in the Pacific Northwest since the 1920s and 30s when irrigation and the dams were put in, that, you know, we can do things better, but we have to talk about how we're going to do that better. You know, would you want your sons and daughters to have more access to reliable energy, not only just one option, but multiple options? And I think that's what Congressman Simpson's proposal is set to do, is that, you know, I think his proposal is more an energy proposal than it is a just for salmon or just for transport, but you know, it's heavy energy as well.
Now, is this being considered as part of Biden's larger infrastructure proposal by any chance?
You know, we've been pushing to get it there. It just doesn't seem to we haven't got that far yet. But we reached out to the administration and the congressional leaders, all of our senators and Congress. From the Pacific Northwest, and we just continue those efforts to see that, you know, well, let's sit down and have this conversation, because it needs to happen. You know, there's obligations that the federal government has to the tribes as well.
I'm wondering what kind of political buy-in is going on right now, and how much support are people getting from the Oregon and the Washington delegations?
Well, definitely, you know, the Washington delegation has been, you know, listening and wanting to, you know, to find a solution for, you know, what the concerns that Congressman Simpson has brought up and the tribes have stood behind now, united. And, you know, Congressman Blumenauer and Governor Brown, you know, have, you know, supported Congressman Simpson's proposal, that, you know, there's more conversation happening, which is good, you know, but we also need action, and action has to take place with all the Northwest delegation. And I think the more that people are willing to sit and speak the truth to one another, that, you know, we at Nez Perce do. We say we like to turn our lights on, charge our phones, and, you know, we like transport because we have, you know, thousands of acres in agriculture, in grain, and we also have solar power, you know, so, and we have tourism, recreation. So we're involved in all of the sectors. So we definitely want to see things done better and smarter into the future. So I think those conversations should happen at some point in time so that we're not just kicking the can down the road and leaving it for the next generation to solve when, you know, we've done all the studying that we could. We've experienced many different things, and we've definitely seen a decline of salmon and the growth of the Pacific Northwest economically. But we've also seen the science. And the science tells us that we need to do something, and so when the science is speaking to you, you know, that's we need to listen to that. And with technologies, we should be able to make those changes. And that's all we're asking is that, you know, we look at our experience, we listen to the science, and we take the technology and we take action with that technology that we're able to move into the future for a stronger, better Northwest.
Well, Brett, I'm wondering, Governor Brown and Earl Blumenauer, Oregon politicians are supporting the plan. What about the Washington politicians?
Yeah, so just backing up a second, you know, Representative Simpson put forward a concept. It wasn't legislative language. It was basically a concept that the Vice Chair Wheeler just explained, and it was, you know, the summary is breaching the dams, replacing the power, and trying to make whole anybody who is harmed by this by providing a lot of, you know, economic incentive to various entities. So, you know, that was a proposal to debate. And unfortunately, you know, we have not, Senator Murray and Governor Inslee came out with essentially a statement saying they didn't support that, and Senators Wyden and Merkley, you know, we just need to see more action. And so the senators in the Pacific Northwest have, I hope, you know, by not moving forward with that proposal from Representative Simpson, are now taking a new approach, but you know, are taking some leadership on this. I'm hopeful, and we need to see action. We haven't seen anything yet. I don't know is the short answer.
How do we get some action out of them?
Well, so, you know, this is a really important time. I mean, it's a really special time where we have a big infrastructure package, and this was, frankly, part of the impetus for, you know, the big push of this campaign. We have the potential of a big infrastructure package with a lot of money from the Biden administration. We have Pacific Northwest leaders part of key committees in Congress. We have Democratic control of Congress. And so, you know, there was a lot of hope, but we haven't seen action. And so what can people do? I mean, our Pacific Northwest delegation needs to hear from people, needs to hear that, you know, we believe we can replace 4% of the region's electricity with clean energy, and we can do it now. And we can, you know, we value salmon. We value upholding and standing in solidarity with tribal nations. If that's what people believe, if that's the values they hold, we need to make that very clear to our delegation and, you know, demand action.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland. Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Brett VandenHeuvel, Executive Director of Columbia Riverkeeper, and Shannon Wheeler, Vice Chair of the Nez Perce Tribe, about why the Columbia Basin Fund proposal is so critical at this moment and what it will take to make it a reality. Well, Brett, I got an email from you this morning about a rather catastrophic event that's happening at the confluence of the Little White Salmon and Columbia Rivers. I want to talk a bit about that and how you feel that that may be impetus to push this proposal further.
Yeah, we're seeing sockeye that are, you know, on their miraculous journey from the Pacific Ocean up into possibly Snake River, Upper Columbia areas to spawn, and they've stopped because the river is too hot to get there. We don't know how many have stopped, but the same thing happened in 2015 during some really hot water, and it's heartbreaking. I mean, we have video that shows these sockeye covered in lesions, swimming around in circles to dying. They're not going to survive to spawn. And so this, people talk about fish kills. I mean, this isn't just a fish kill, something that's happened in the past. It's happening right now. These fish are suffering. Salmon need cold water to survive, right? They're a cold water species. So if the river gets above 68 degrees, the scientists have determined that's too hot for long-term survival. The river's about in the, 72, 73 right now, and so they're ducking into these cooler water tributaries where they don't belong, where they're not going to spawn, and they're swimming around dying. And what the heat, it's pollution, right? It's just like oil spill or mercury or something. The pollution from the hot water is killing the salmon. And it's caused by the dams. The dams create stagnant reservoirs that heat up and cause the river to become too hot. And then with climate change and this hot weather we're having, it's pushing it over the edge. And so this hot water is something that's, driving these salmon runs to not survive. And, there's problems throughout the system, but the Snake River is way too hot for when these fish, if these fish get up there, and dam removal is a, is a solution to cool the waters. So we're gonna share some of these really heartbreaking underwater videos tomorrow, and we have plans to try to do a bit of a vigil on Friday for these fish, and just say our prayers, but also to try to inspire some action by if someone watches this video of these salmon in this horrific state, and that doesn't move them to action, to care and to notice the problem and move some of our leaders to action, I don't know what will.
Well, you mentioned earlier about the importance of contacting our elected officials. Does Columbia Riverkeeper have anything on your website, petitions or anything that people can sign, other ways that people can become more energized to really focus on pushing to remove these dams?
Yeah, so we have ways to take action. We have petition on Riverkeeper's website under a Take Action tab that would contact, it identifies where people live and puts them in touch with the right senators. It has phone numbers for, if you're in Oregon, Senator Wyden and Senator Merkley. Following on social media keeps up to date on the latest information about things like these videos and vigils and actions that we're taking. There's also multiple other NGOs and others that are engaged in this. And so, I encourage people to take action, and you can find a petition at ColumbiaRiverKeeper.org under Take Action tab.
And we'll have a link to that on the Locust Focus website as well. Shannon, what can people do to help the tribes in your struggle to get rid of these dams?
Well, one of the things is that the at change.org, the Umatilla youth have supported removal of the Snake River dams, and they were trying to get to 15,000 signatures. Currently, they're at 13,637 people have signed the petition, and that's a movement that it's a letter that's going to President Biden, and they're looking for the support, and they're pretty close now. And as we continue to push forward that all the tribes, the tribes being united in the Pacific Northwest, as well as the National Congress of American Indians, passed a resolution in support of breaching the dams, that we will continue to ask the Northwest delegation and basically all the congressional leaders of the United States to take a good solid look at this and to make the decision that what's best for the future. And honestly, you know, the constituents of Washington and Oregon need to, if they're in support of saving salmon, steelhead, lamprey, orca, that, you know, you need to speak up, and now is the time to do that. You know, there is many biological crises in the world today. The salmon crisis is definitely one that needs a lot of attention. I just wanted to mention something about what is happening here, that many populations of the Snake River Spring Chinook salmon and steelhead are on a slope of extinction. And our biologist presented a call to alarm on the ominous status of these populations in an analysis that our managers in the Department of Idaho Fish and Game, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife concurred with, that we're talking about a point where populations become doomed to extinction. And what biologists call the quasi-extinction threshold. Right now, 42% of the Snake River Spring Summer Chinook populations are at or below the quasi-extinction threshold. That is 50 natural origin spawners or less on the spawning grounds for four consecutive years. And 77% of the population are predicted to drop below the QET level by 2025, within the next 4 years. So, you know, we're raising the alarm, and the time for action is now, and we need the support of the Pacific Northwest, you know, not only the Northwest delegation, but the people too, that, you know, I always like to mention, you know, what the Pacific Northwest once was, and how that the wealth of the nation was built off of much of the resources of the Pacific Northwest, and what gave the Northwest its vast resources and contributed to the growth of the natural resources, or we call them life sources here, was the salmon that distributed those nutrients of nitrogen, phosphorus into the landscape from ridgetop to ridgetop and everything in between. That, you know, the salmon was a provider to the land. And a lot of times we forget that. And that's what we're here to speak for, is that, you know, what Lewis and Clark seen and found and tasted was salmon and a rich Northwest that had so many resources that helped build this country, that it's time to take a good solid look at that as well.
Well, Shannon and Brett, it's great having you on. I'm really appreciating what insights you're being able to provide listeners about the plight of salmon on the Columbia River and Snake River. So thanks very much for being on Locust Focus today.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
We've been talking with Brett Vanden Heuvel, Executive Director of Columbia River Keeper, and Shannon Wheeler, Vice Chair of the Nez Perce Tribe. And you've been listening to Locust Focus here on Kiwi Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, and Radio Tacoma. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to a podcast on our website, kboo.fm/locust-focus. To hear previous episodes of the show or any of our KBOO Public Affairs programming, go to KBOO-FM or listen on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. I want to give special thanks to the KBOO staff, who are doing an incredible job of not only keeping KBOO on the air, but helping all us volunteers make the best radio possible from home during this pandemic. And you can help us if you're able by becoming a member of KBOO or renewing your membership if you're already a member. Go to kboo.fm and click on the donate button on the upper right-hand corner of the homepage, or text KBOO to 44321. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio. Next week, we'll talk with Oregon State Representative Con Pham about some ambitious, community-informed environmental justice bills that were passed during this year's legislative session. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We'll go out with some music by Primo and Mike. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, wash your hands, get your COVID shots, and remember to socially distance when necessary and wear a mask.